Chat with Traders is sponsored by Trade the Pool. Are concerns about limited buying power, insufficient capital, or fear of losing your own money preventing you from advancing your trading capabilities? Trade the Pool is an online stock trading prop firm that offers funding for stock traders. Demonstrate your skills, trade their capital, and keep your profits. You can engage in intraday trading and now swing trading on Trade the Pool with any U.S. stock or ETF. The procedure is straightforward. Pay an evaluation fee, successfully complete the evaluation, and get funded. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Markets, speculation, and risk. This is the Chat with Traders podcast, hosted by Aaron Fifield.
Hey folks, what's good? Welcome to episode 187 of Chat with Traders. So I had this idea recently that it might be an interesting exercise to have a few less experienced traders on the show. On Twitter, I wrote, I'd like to chat with someone who, one, has just completed their first year of full-time trading, two, started with a minimum of $20,000, three, is or isn't profitable, not important, as long as he or she is taking deliberate action to improve. From this tweet, I received an overwhelming number of DMs for consideration, and after filtering through them all, there were several people who really stood out and who I will be speaking with. So there's going to be several episodes in the near future with guests who fit this general description. The first cab off the rank, though, is Joshua Evans, my guest for this episode. He's 30-something years of age, living in Melbourne, Australia, and he's actively trading ASX equities. This conversation with Josh follows his progression from newbie investor to intraday trader, including his motivation and preparation for going full-time. A few specific things which have helped Josh to get his equity curve pointing in the right direction, which you can take a look at for yourself in the show notes at chatwithtraders.com/187. Plus deliberate processes Josh has implemented for improvement, one piece of advice he received that made a big difference, and that's not all. I think I made a great decision to bring Josh on for this episode. He was a fantastic guest, and I am sure you will agree, and I'm also sure he'll be back at some point too. And now, showtime folks, 187, Josh Evans, here we go.
Go too big and then you have this huge loss first day back. You're just like, oh, mate.
That really rattles your confidence.
Oh, definitely.
Anyway, man, let's get into things. I'd like to ask you straight away, like, what were you doing prior to trading? What were you doing before you got into this?
Yeah, sure. So I was a radiographer for 11 years. So, yeah, working in hospitals and stuff. Yeah, doing basically, I sort of specialized in CT, but went through starting in x-ray, all that sort of stuff, hospitals, and then ended up in a private practice. And yeah, I was a chief radiographer there, which was kind of good because I had it like more of a, it was still clinical, but an admin role as well. So I did have my laptop in the corner watching the market as well. I hope my employers are not listening.
So how did the interest in trading actually come about?
Yeah, so I lived overseas for a few years doing radiography, and so I was in the UK, and over there you just get much more sort of responsibility within the role. And so coming back to Australia, I came back and then I sort of felt like I'd taken a backward step, really, because we couldn't do half the things that, you know, we were doing over in the UK. And I think that's all because of the NHS is so understaffed. So whereas over here, we've got a decent workforce within our health system. So yeah, I just felt I wasn't doing as much as I used to. And I actually started looking I wanted to sort of keep moving up in the world, I guess, and keep challenging myself. So I wanted to actually do medicine, get into study medicine just to sort of keep working in health. I thought, oh, well, that's probably the next step. And I'll cut a long story short, basically I did the GAMSAT, which is the entry exam, and there's a few other sort of variables you have to get through, but I did that. And anyway, I didn't end up getting in all because of my GPA from uni. So that kind of I hit a crossroads, really. I was like, I want to sort of move on from radiography and not sort of cap. I mean, it doesn't all come down to money, but, you know, radiography is pretty capped, I guess. And then so I started looking at other ways to sort of get a better paying job, I guess. And that's when I started looking, into the market.
Okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense. And what was your first introduction, if you will, once you did start looking at the market? Like, where did your experience begin there?
Yeah, so I wouldn't recommend this, but I had a bit of money come through from inheritance, and obviously I thought, okay, this is a good start. You know, I might as well make a positive out of negative. So that's when I had money to sort of put into the market. I didn't start big or anything like that, but you know, I got a mate. Oh, you got some money? How about you chuck it into this gold stock, this gold spec? You know, it's going to go to a dollar. It's going to do this, all that sort of stuff. And you know, my eyes lit up, thinking, oh, this is too good to be true. And of course, it was. But luckily, I got away unscathed. And as I said, I didn't have a heap of money. Like, it wasn't a big position whatsoever. But that was the first introduction for me, and I really didn't like the feeling of not knowing why the stock was moving up and down. And so, yeah, from that little introduction, that's where sort of my passion for just learning as much as I could about the market, that's where that all came into play.
Okay. So you took a bit of a risk on one particular gold stock.
Yeah, just the one. So I had no real idea about, you know, spreading your risk, diversifying a portfolio, things like that. But I mean, from that experience, it did lead me into looking how to sort of play it a bit safer. But as I said, that first little dabble, I guess, if you will, was what sort of started it all for me.
Okay. Tell me about, was it around 2015 that you started investing in or getting a bit more active with the investing?
Yeah, well, I was probably quite lucky. I timed it well. You know, we had that sort of around 2015, 16, we had that sort of mining spec run, I guess, especially in lithium stocks over here on the ASX. So I probably was quite lucky that, you know, I had where there was active. There was a lot happening in that sort of end of the market, you know, so it didn't sort of bore me out of it. You know, I've seen of late, they're just those sort of stocks that I used to, I was investing back then. Yeah, they've been beat down and, geez, they've just bore you out. So, but yeah, that's when I really got started. And because there was a lot happening, accelerate your learning curve somewhat, because you're not just sitting there each day twiddling your thumbs, having a look, and, you know, things were moving 5, 10% a day and they'd pull back a bit. And yeah, so, and as I said, I just didn't like not understanding why these were moving. So I just started devouring books, online courses, some good, some bad. That's probably the best year for me to start. If I look back and have a think about it, I was quite lucky in that aspect.
Yeah. So you say you were quite lucky, but what gave you the idea to actually put your money into these lithium companies?
I did do a lot of research, and I say that with a grain of salt, but you know, we've, especially over here and on the ASX, as everyone's heard of the forum type website, Hot Copper. And so that's kind of what, there was some people on there with some really good knowledge, and there was a lot of people who just, you know, were just obviously shilling the stock. Yeah, that's kind of where I sort of learned how to look into researching whether, you know, certain companies were buying mines that had been mined before, tenements that had been mined before or had been drilled before, even back when, you know, lithium wasn't the hot stock. So there was, that's when I started to realize, okay, you can kind of get a little bit of a head start here by, you know, looking out, seeing if you can find any old drilling reports or things like that. And yeah, I got really lucky with one stock, AVZ. I got in quite early there. And the reason I was pretty confident, it wasn't actually my real research. It was somebody else on that forum who'd just done so much research, had purchased all these old articles on, I think, when the Belgians were mining. This this tenement was in the Congo. So there was a lot of talk like, oh, it's never going to mine, things like that. But it didn't worry me because I'd seen that sort of first lithium bull run where things were just going crazy. Anything that drilled well, you know, they were bagging left, right and center. So I just thought if I can get set, you know, maybe I can make a decent bit of money on this. And yeah, that's probably, I mean, it is, you're right. There was some research into it, but at the same time, it's all about timing, isn't it? Not sort of being the last on the train.
Yeah, you said that right.
Yeah.
Can you share just rough numbers about how much you made during this period?
Yeah, sure. I did, into the AVZ trade, I put in about, I think once I'd built my position, I built it around between one cent and 2.4 cents. And I ended up taking, I had about $25,000 position. I ended up taking it out at 21.5 cents, but that was on the way back down. And I think it reached a high of 38.8 cents. So it was around 1 million shares. So it's pretty easy. It was 1 million shares at 38 cents was 380 grand. And to me, that was, whoa, you know, that was like, all right, I'm doing pretty well here. But I mean, at the same time, that really got blown out of the water, that stock. And, you know, it's trading down at 4 or 5 cents at the moment. So I was lucky I took it out up the top. So I ended up pulling out about $215,000 out of $25,000 position. So it was a great start, and it did give me money that to put aside that I can, you know, really give intraday trading a go, because that's where I really wanted to sort of head. I didn't really like the fact of the overnight risk. Like one day it goes up 10%, next day it goes down 15%, the next day it goes up 12%. Yeah, it was hard to sleep at night, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. Tell me about the motivator to go full time.
Yeah. So probably, yeah, the motivator was I wanted to get into intraday trading because I think that just suits my personality better. You know, I don't like sitting there waiting. I'm not the most patient person. So I'd started, that's, you know, when I came across Chat with Traders actually. And, you know, I'd started listening to a lot of the guys who do intraday trading, and I really thought, yeah, that, you know, that suits me to a T. You know, it's right up my alley. So I started thinking, well, you can't intraday trade just by sitting there for 1 hour a day. I mean, you can trade the open, I guess, but I don't know, to me, the way the market unfolds the rest of the day is almost like a bit of a blueprint as to how it's going to maybe act the next day, especially in some stocks, you know, levels, things like that. So I started to realize that I needed to put time into it. And yeah, what I did was I spoke to my employers, and I was worked pretty hard at the place I was at, and you know, it was a busy clinic, and I said, look, I really want to go part time and have one day off a week. And they knew I was into trading, and you know, I said I was just a trader, and I said, oh, well, yeah, it is, but you know, I think it'd be quite good for my, oh, I felt like I was getting burnt out as well. You know, I said that, and anyway, they agreed that I could have one day off a week, and that's where it sort of started to head in towards that full-time. That was the plan, to go full-time, but you know, obviously I wasn't going to chuck all the eggs in the one basket straight away. I wanted to get a feel for it, get the setup, and you know, set all my you know, try all the different software, things like that, see what fit me best, I guess.
Seems like you took a pretty smart approach to this. Like you were well capitalized. You had a decent sum of money behind you. Like you weren't living week to week, and yeah, you kept your job. You just dropped down your hours so that you could have some time to watch the market intraday, even if it was just one day a week to begin with.
Yeah, that's it. I think, and that's probably what's, yeah, it's helped me. I did have that little foundation, even though when it did come to going full time, I realized, wow, I know nothing. But when I look back, I'm like, okay, I did know something, and I had that foundation there, which was a little step up when I did go to full time, and it wasn't as overwhelming, I guess.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure where this fits into the timeline exactly, but this may have also contributed in some way or been a bit of a motivator. You were diagnosed with some form of cancer, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's funny, you know, I worked in in radiography, you know, doing scans, CT scans every day that sort of diagnosed people with cancer. And, you know, I had these lumps in my neck and, you know, being a typical guy, I was like, oh, no, they'll go away. And anyway, probably I buried my head in the sand for probably 3 months. And, yeah, they just weren't going away. And I got a few of the girls sort of from work in the ultrasound say, oh, can you have a bit of a look here? And they're like, oh, Josh, go see a doctor. I'm like, oh, no, you know, I don't get sick. I'm the one who does the scans. But anyhow, they finally convinced me to go see a doctor. And yeah, thank God they did. Yeah, because I had a biopsy and I didn't lose a lick of sleep whatsoever. I thought they'll just give me the royal treatment just because of, you know, I worked in the industry. And anyway, 6 days later, it came back. Yeah, and I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma.
So what exactly is that?
Basically, it's like a cancer, I guess, if you will, of the lymph node. So, I had the posterior cervical chain. So basically, the back left side of my neck. I had probably about 15, like decent lumps. You know, sort of small marble size. Felt like, you know, it did feel like marble sort of embedded under my skin in the muscle type thing. And so basically, what it does is I didn't feel sick or anything like that, but you know what it does. It's quite quick, so it's a spread. So that's why you want to get onto it quick. But that's in saying that's another reason why it reacts so well to treatment. Luckily, I got it at stage one. It hadn't spread anywhere, so it was just in that lymph node area I said before. And so went into the chemotherapy so it was all pretty quick. So within 2 weeks, I was doing chemo. And yeah, that's what made me sick. I thought, you know, I was 33 at the time, I was pretty fit. And I thought, yeah, you know, I'll be fine. But nah, that really smoked me. It hit me for six.
That's crazy, man. What causes it? Like, is there anything they know of, or is it just pretty random?
Yeah, it is a little random. So I don't want to scare people, but so if you've had the Epstein-Barr virus or what's more commonly known as glandular fever, you have a higher chance of getting it. It doesn't mean you will whatsoever. It just, that's one of the things that they've found that, people who have had glandular fever in the past are a little more susceptible to getting it. It doesn't mean you will, doesn't mean it's a much more increased chance, but there's some sort of link there. I didn't know I'd had it. It turns out that I had it in the past because when they did the biopsy, they could tell that, yeah, I had this Epstein-Barr virus. And when I think back, I'm pretty sure I know exactly when it was. It was when I was living in Portugal in a hostel working there. So, you know, many late nights. And I just thought that's what it was. That's why I was so tired. But that's probably what it was the Epstein-Barr virus.
Full on. And how long did the chemo treatment take?
So I was pretty lucky with that. Chemo, I had, it's a decent dose. It's called ABVD. That's the drugs. Well, that's just, yeah, the acronym they call of the drugs. And it's a decent whack. And I'm a decent sized guy. I was about 100 kilos at the time. So, you know, they work out your dose by weight. So anyway, I got a fair bit. And it was every 2 weeks I'd have chemo, and that was over a period of 2 months. So it definitely wasn't as bad as some people, you know, like when I was in hospital for a bit, I got admitted for a while, and yeah, there was this guy next to me, and you know, he was on his sort of ninth month of chemo. So I was really lucky in that aspect. You know, as I said, it did make me pretty crook and, you know, lost the hair and everything like that. But yeah, as far as it goes, it could have been far, far worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're all good now?
I'm good. Yeah. So coming up in March, fingers crossed, we'll be 2 years in remission. So, yeah, fingers crossed for that. But I feel really good, and, you know, all my checkups have been great. And yes, and that's it, mate. I've got a pretty positive outlook on it. It's one of those things where, as you said before, yeah, I mean, I'm getting around to this long segue, I guess. But, yeah, it did. It made me realize we don't know, as grim as this sounds, we don't know if we're going to be here next week. So you have to, and I guess it gave me a little fast forwards to sort of tell myself, well, you know, mate, just if you want to keep doing one day trading a week for another 2-3 years until you can, you know, build up more money or something like that, you might not be here. And so, yeah, it really did give me that sort of motivation to be like, all right, I do have enough money put aside. Like, I'll just have to sort of make, so I won't be able to live the same lifestyle I've been living. But, you know, that's sacrifice, isn't it? And if you want to do something like this, you can't expect that you're going to live exactly the same lifestyle from the get-go. So I thought, yeah, why not? Time's now. Let's do it. And yeah, that's what I did.
So how long have you been trading full-time for as of today?
As of today, I've been probably about, what are we now? January. So about 15, 16 months full-time. And I've had, you know, a little probably had a month off in that period there. So yeah, just a bit over a year. And mate, I haven't looked back, to tell you the truth. I absolutely love it.
Well, that's good to hear. That's really good. So obviously we highlighted a couple things just before that you were well capitalized, you had decent funds behind you. And to begin with, you started to cut down on your hours at work. When you did take the plunge to go 100% full-time trading, was there anything else which you did to prepare? Like you kind of hinted there that you made some slight adjustments to, you know, your lifestyle. I don't imagine they were huge, dramatic changes, but was there anything else which you did do in order to prepare for this change?
Well, look, I was living with a girlfriend at the time, so I was lucky in that aspect too, that I had her to sort of not rely on, but support, I guess. And so I wasn't too, because when you have to think about it, especially if you work a social job, basically if you're going to go start trading full-time from home, you're not going to see many people. And that can be a big factor for some people. You know, they and I'm a pretty social guy. So the others, I had her to come home every day, which was great. But yeah, probably other little tiny adjustments that people don't really think of was, you know, I made sure that I was going to the gym all the time, gym classes, so I could see people and just sort of have that day-to-day interaction. Yeah, little things like that. But yeah, there wasn't a heap of like, well, probably another thing, it's not really on that same vein, but preparing to go full-time was I had a sort of little home office, but I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this properly, I want more screens and, you know, so I had to get a better desk. And because I'm sitting in this chair all the time, you know, I went out and sort of, I really sort of turned it into a proper home office. And I think that's kind of important because, you know, you might be a month into it and you're like, oh, you know, and you start sort of spending time Googling better chairs, better desks, better screens, things like that. You just want to sort of hit the ground running because that's, you know, it's, I don't know, maybe it's like when you're a kid, you just learn so much in these first few weeks of, it's such a, you know, sensation that you're sort of thrust into, you know, you try and just absorb as much and you don't want to be too distracted, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. I mean, for me personally, I've never kind of thought twice about spending money on that sort of thing because I spend so much time in front of the computer. It's like when I started the podcast, I just went out and bought like the best equipment I could. All those little things, they really matter. You know, if you're trying to, you know, you're struggling away on a little laptop or something, you're not going to get great results. You know, you want to be kind of put yourself in the best position to succeed, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that was kind of my reasoning as well. I was like, you know, as I said, I had that little bit of money put aside, that capital anyway. So I didn't dig too deep into it, but I did buy stuff that was, you know, decent screens, you know, and you want to have a good set, especially if you start running, you know, more screens, you need to make sure that your computer can handle it, things like that.
Yeah.
So I think you do have to sort of, you have to get into that mindset where, I mean, don't go crazy, but you're going to have to spend money to make money, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. You need to invest in yourself.
Yeah.
Are you a developing or seasoned day trader who trades the US markets? Is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level is having enough capital to trade? Trade the Pool is a unique online stock trading prop firm that funds stock traders worldwide. Not having to risk your own capital can help you focus on other things like making better decisions on your trades. There's no PDT rules to worry about. You got more than 12,000 stocks and ETFs to trade, long or short, and professional tools at your side. How you get funded is you show them your skills through a straightforward evaluation process. Once you pass the evaluation, you get funded and trade with their pool of money, and split the profits. Don't let the lack of buying power, capital, or fear of losing your own money prevent you from taking your trading to the next level. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Let me ask you, what misconceptions did you have, or even if they weren't misconceptions, maybe unexpected challenges or realizations that you came to once you did begin to trade full time?
I'm a pretty confident guy, like, you know, not overconfident, but at the same time, I felt like I'd prepared myself quite well to step into full-time trading, and I didn't expect to sort of, you know, be making money day one, even, you know, 3-4 months in. But I probably thought, you know, by 6 months I'd have a decent handle on it, and that just wasn't the case. I think, you know, you sort of have to realize that the market changes every day, and it sort of morphs from, you know, what it was 2 months ago. It's completely different to what it may be today. You might be sort of in these churny ranges, or, you know, you might be in a strong sort of small little bull run, or a, you know, bear run type things like that. So that was probably one of the things that I didn't really think about too much. Like, you know, we all read the books and stuff. Yeah, market conditions, this and that. But I don't know, maybe in my head I was thinking, oh, you know, setups will still work in this, setups will work in that. But, you know, you start making progress in a typical market condition, for example, and then, as I said, 2-3 months later, it's just not working. And I didn't really think that would happen. So, like, the market sort of changes so quick. So that was one of the big sort of challenges. Just when you sort of feel like you're making progress, next minute the market changes and nothing you're doing is working. So you kind of, it almost feels like you're back to square one a little bit.
How much money did you put in your actual trading account to get started?
So I started, I had 50K to start with, but with my broker, you know, I trade on a leveraged account, so I didn't really need that. And, you know, I was speaking to a few guys and, you know, who'd been trading for quite a while, and they just said to me, look, if you don't need it in there, don't have it. So I pulled it back to 20, and that was good. You know, I never sort of, because I wasn't going massive to start in any case. You know, in some stocks you can get 5% margin, so you can still put on decent size. But yeah, that's probably another thing that I didn't really think about. But, you know, I have a mortgage on an apartment that I rent out, and you know, so I have an offset account, and it's embarrassing to say this, but yeah, I didn't need that 50 grand in the, you know, that extra 30 grand in the trading account. So it was so much better off just sitting in my offset account, taking a bit of the interest away. So, but 20K was on a leveraged account. I think that was definitely more than enough for when I started. And I probably could have even gone as low as 10.
Yeah. I mean, the way things work in Australia trading direct market access CFDs, you can get pretty substantial buying power with $20,000. So especially like in your first couple months trading, even if you've got the money, it's probably not wise to be trading, you know, 50 grand leveraged up. You know, you can do enough damage with 20K.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the other thing as well. I mean, you're kind of eliminating sort of an external risk there as well. If something was to go wrong with the broker, you know, which has happened in the past.
Yeah.
You know, we've all heard stories, like horror stories like that, that, you know, at least all your money wasn't in that account. So if you don't need it, there's no real reason to have it.
So how much did you, what's the most you've drawn down on the account? Like you said, you know, this first few months you weren't going up in P&L. How much did you come down?
Yeah, I ended up coming down to, I was pretty good to start with. I wasn't going too big or anything like that. But then as I started to increase my size, I started to get, I wasn't overconfident, but I wanted to get comfortable being uncomfortable, if that makes sense. And I probably took that a little bit too far. And so I probably drew down about 12,000. So I was down to around 8,000. And that was when I started, you start to realize, well, I am trying to increase my size here, but it gets in your, you know, you don't trade properly. You, if you go too big too soon, you're not trading properly. You're not trading your plan. You're watching your P&L every tick, and you're not getting comfortable, becoming uncomfortable. You're just becoming way too uncomfortable. So that was when probably that period where I took the big drawdown. And yeah, I was, again, probably lucky I only had the 20K in there, because who knows, maybe I would have even been sizing up bigger, which again is, I probably wouldn't have, but you just never know when you get into sort of that mindset when you're spiraling a little bit.
Yeah, might just take one day where you're not thinking clearly and just get a little bit too aggressive when you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
When you drew your account down to around about $8,000, was there ever a point where you started to doubt your ability to be able to do this?
Definitely, yeah. I started to think, you get all these negative thoughts like, oh, you know, you idiot, what have you done? What's your mother going to think? Things. No, but I did. I started to sort of doubt my ability, and I thought, you know, I started to think, oh, you know, is it luck? Was it luck? And then I also was struggling as well, because that, when I was down at 8K, I couldn't size like I used to. So even, and what I was doing, I was probably over trading a little bit as well. So I had, my account was sort of maxed out across, you know, 5-6 different trades or setups type thing. And all of a sudden, you know, a really good setup, an A-plus setup would come through, and I had no money left over to chuck into that trade. And so I'm, you know, pulling out of these other trades I'm in, and it was a vicious cycle, really. It's not a good place to be. And then obviously that really started to weigh on what I thought my ability was, and thought, mate, you've bitten off more than you can chew.
This isn't something that gets spoken about very often, and I actually had a really good conversation on the subject in an episode which I was hoping to put out in December, but unfortunately wasn't able to release it. I tweeted about it at the time. One of the things which was spoken about during that episode was having this point where you give up. Did you have a point about, or was sort of an idea in your mind about when you may give up, if this wasn't did you have a cutoff point?
Yeah, I had sort of, you know, it's funny, you start to bargain with yourself when you get into a sort of these positions. You're like, oh, you're like, oh, you know, if you, it's stupid. You sort of, you look back, and even saying it is embarrassing, because you think, if I was listening to this conversation, I'd be like, who is this guy? What's he doing? But you do make these bargains with yourself, like, oh, you know, if you can just, you know, stick it out, if you don't lose any money, if you don't go down to $6,000 or whatever, you know, you're good to go, and I'll add a bit more to the account so you can start the sizing up again. But, and then also as well, once I started to sort of get into that state of despair, well, not despair, but like, yeah, doubting myself, like you were saying before, I had sort of said to myself, all right, if this $20,000 goes, I'll put another 20 in, but that's it. If I wasn't making progress, if I was going to just get, you know, blow up another $20,000, I did have to sort of really look myself in the mirror and say, mate, it's just not working. You know, you're going to have to give it up, because otherwise it would just, if I'm not making progress when I should be, then, you know, I think that was what they say, that's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
And I often sort of bring myself back to that saying when in my trading as well. I'm like, what are you doing, mate? You're doing what you did before, and you're expecting it to work for you this time. And occasionally you will get that luck, but that's not, you don't want to be riding luck in your trading career. So, but yeah, I think I had that sort of probably, yeah, that if I'd lost that $40,000, like if I'd give myself an extra 20 and then lost that, I would have really been like, all right, mate, back to Centrelink and start hitting the job ads. But no, thankfully it didn't get to that. But it's funny you say that, because there's another, I kind of have checkpoints for myself, because you know, I'm still sort of, don't get me wrong, I'm still learning. I learn every day. And I'm not, I know I'm not invincible in the market. And so I do have checkpoints that I, you know, sort of give myself. And one was just, you know, after Christmas, New Year period, I wanted to look at, you know, sort of my results and my equity curve and make sure it was pointing in the right direction, because that had been over a year by then. You know, it's just a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, I thought, you know, if I'm not after sort of 15, 16 months starting to point that equity curve up, maybe I've got to have a real hard look at myself and just think, you know, I'm not cutting the mustard here. And anyway, I've got to the point and I've passed that checkpoint. And then so I've kind of given, like in my yearly review, I'll do six monthly checkpoints now and just make sure I'm heading in the right direction, make sure I've got enough money to last the next 6 months, things like that. And that's kind of, it's funny you bring that up. I think that's probably, especially for, look, I don't know, I'm no expert, but maybe the first definitely few years, you can't sort of get ahead of yourself. Even when you are having good periods, I think you still potentially need to sort of give yourself that check and make sure you are on the right path and you're not just, you know, just being blasé about what your results are like and whether or not you're moving forward.
Yeah. I think it's definitely something which needs to be given some consideration. It needs to be factored in a little bit. Obviously, it's one of those things which you just don't really want to think about as a newer trader. You're obviously come into this very optimistic, but you know, there is a real opportunity cost to the time that you invest in trying to learn how to trade and find, you know, a way to extract some P&L from the market.
Yeah, 100%. And then I think another thing as well is the reason why you don't think about it is you don't want to feel like a failure. Like a lot of your family and your friends know you've taken this big step, and not everyone makes it in the market. And it's, I mean, taking a step is a brave thing to do, especially if you've given yourself every chance, you know, to make it. But even if you don't, it's not, as long as you weren't, you know, stupid and just gambling your money away on the market. But I think that's probably one of the harder things. It's your pride as well. So you don't want to think about not, you know, this give up point, because you're like, oh, it's in your own mind, you think it's a failure.
Yeah. Yeah. You're dead on. And I mean, I have a huge amount of respect and admiration for anybody who's taken the step to throw everything into this and try and learn how to trade. Obviously, responsibly.
yeah, that's it. Like, you know, you have to be, that's the thing, you have to be responsible for your own actions as well. You can't blame the market. Oh, some guy hunted my stop, whatever. Like, mate, you just, occasionally you'll get, you know, you will get slippage and stuff, but if you keep your wrist tight, you're not just sort of throwing everything away. But yeah, just be responsible for your own actions, really.
That's right. So how have you been trading, and has there been, like, obviously your accounts bounced from that $8,000 point. Did you change what you were doing in any way? Like, was there a significant change, or did you just tighten up some things? And just, I haven't asked you this question yet, but like, just for anyone who's listening, just give a real brief kind of overview to your style and approach to trading.
Yeah, no doubt. So pretty much what I do is, and you know, you've probably heard a few people say it in your interviews before, on the ASX, especially intraday trading, we don't get these huge swings and moves throughout the day. So my style is, it's discretionary, but I do try and, you know, sort of scalp with size, you know, sort of in the lower denomination stocks where you're not paying massive brokerage, because we have different brokerage structure to how it's traded in the States and overseas. But yeah, so basically, I'm looking at the lower denom stocks, you know, small, mid cap, probably mid cap are more comfortable. I'm still not brilliant with the small cap because they can have some pretty big swings. But yeah, basically what I try and do is I try and, you know, trade stocks that fit that bill, but also they have a catalyst. So they're an in-play stock, and then, you know, so they're gonna have movement throughout the day. And yeah, basically I try and read the order flow and jump in front of the big money when I can, and then, you know, jump in, have it spike up or spike down, whichever direction I'm going. And then, yeah, with a little bit of size myself, and then, you know, scalping around throughout the day, really, scalping like a madman.
So when you talk about scalping. How many trades, just rough numbers here, might you take on any given day?
Yeah, probably not massive compared to what, you know, you'd read up about scalping, but I don't sort of hold for, you know, like I won't even hold some stocks for more than an hour, but like I'll probably trade on a good day, like when I'm not over trading, I'll do maybe 8 trades, or, you know, I might jump in and out of a stock a few times. So trading around probably 5-6 stocks, maybe trade them a couple times each way if I've got a good feel for the stock. And when I say scalping, I'm trying to, let's say, for example, a stock, you know, broke through the $1 mark, the $1 level, and then you get that instant sort of spike up to $1.03. You know, if there's no follow through and there's, you know, someone's put, someone's jumped on the bid and it just doesn't feel like it's going to be much follow through, I'm happy to take that. So, you know, sort of your 3 pips or 6 pips, I guess, because we trade half points there. But with our commission structure as well, scalping like that wouldn't work on a stock, say, you know, a $70 stock, because you're just going to tear up your account with commissions there. So you, let's say, for example, I've seen on some of the brokers here, it's let's say, for example, introduction rate is 10 basis points. So a round trade is going to cost you 20 basis points. So if you took 1% of a move in a $70 stock, so let's say you bought it right at 70, it went up to $70.70 and you sold, that's 1% move. Well, what's that, 1/5 of your profit is going to get taken in commission there. So, and then if you were just scalping that, you have to get 0.2% just to break even just for your commission. So yeah, if you were to take 15 points, so $70.15, for example, you'd only just be breaking it even. So you do need that bigger move in those larger stocks. Just make it worthwhile with your commission, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I will just say, if you're paying 10 basis points and you're actively trading intraday, yeah,
you might need your broker.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but I think that's another thing, you know, building a relationship with a broker and they know that you're sort of serious about it. And I mean, you know, you can get competitive brokers out there, and as long as they're giving you what you need. And I think that's another big thing you have to think about, yeah, your brokerage and how much commission percentage of your profit per day you're doing.
Yeah, it's a big part of it. Now, I guess the first part of that question, which I asked you, was when you drew your count down to around about that $8,000 mark, things kind of turned around from there. And yeah. I don't mean turn around as though, like, you know, just you came down and you bounced straight off, but, you know, things started to pick up.
Yeah.
Did you do anything differently, or did you just find a better groove in the market? Like, can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, sorry, I did go on a tangent there. I think what I was saying was, yeah, I was starting to look, yeah, at, I went down to trade those lower denom stocks, because what was happening was I was, you know, trading sort of, you know, in, you know, stocks that were $10, $20, $30, and I just wasn't getting those moves. So I wasn't, you know, for each, if I had a win rate of 50%, for example, you know, every trade that I lose, I've got the commission on top of the losing trade as well. So I started to go down to the lower denom stocks and, yeah, really focus on the order flow and not just sort of, you know, where a level is, like, oh, you know, it should bounce here, not actually even looking at the, you know, what the price action is doing, whether it's, there's heavy selling into the support, things like that. I really started to, yeah, take it much more, I put a lot more energy into learning how to read the order flow, and that's where things started to turn around and pick up for me.
Okay. Just on that point about order flow, is there anything specific which you're looking for? I know these types of things can be a little bit hard to put into words, but is there something that you like to see within the order book?
In the order book itself, I don't really pay all that much attention, because we've all seen it, you know, what's there 1 second might be pulled, you know, it's ticks down one point. But I think what I, you know, what I really sort of am looking for is, I'm looking for, I almost tell myself a story, as weird as this sounds, like if I'm in a stock that I have, that has a catalyst, and it's, and I think, all right, there's, if I see selling pressure, I'm like, okay, let's say, for example, I was, you know, a big player and I had to get rid of, you know, 3 million units of stock type thing. I'm not just going to chuck it all on the market at once because, you know, that's not going to work. So what I'll look for is I want to see, you know, there's all these sort of big volumes of selling and then maybe letting the order book fill back up a little bit. And then once a few more bids appear, yeah, I want to see it sort of get sold back into again. And I try and tell myself, okay, that's where the direction is. That's where it seems to be anyway. And then, yeah, I try and think in my head if I was that sort of broker that needs to sell all that stock. So I am looking for those bigger, heavy sellers. So once it pulls up a little bit and, it, you know, it might not get as far back as it, let's say, for example, it's gone to 625 and it's been sold down to 620. You know, it's so it's almost like a, I don't know, like a pond just slowly filling and then all of a sudden splash and all the bids get splashed out of the water again by that big sell. I know it's a weird analogy, but that's what's going through my head at the moment.
This particular example, which you've described here, would this be something which you were looking to trade on the short side or is that a long opportunity?
Yeah, a bit of both. So I'd probably be looking for a short opportunity if I could. So there is an example I can think of actually in my head. There was FMG, so Fortescue Metals, which, you know, they're big iron ore producer in Australia. And I remember the iron ore chart was going crazy on the SINA website. Anyway, I remember it just kept going up and up and FMG was just, it was going down and I thought, oh, when's this, you know, it's got to be an opportunity coming here for the long. And it just didn't for days and days on end. Iron ore just kept trending up, the price of iron ore, and FMG was just getting sold into. And that's when I really started to remember, okay, you want to look for that massive, massive seller who obviously has that big order. And that's when, even though in your head you're like, oh, there's got to be a long somewhere, until you don't see the seller around for a while, then, you know, I think especially in that situation, that was a short pretty much every day. And I actually did quite well on that because I finally figured out, okay, there's a big seller here and he's every day he'd appear, he'd move up a little bit with sort of in conjunction with the iron ore price, then it would just get smashed back down. So, but obviously intraday, you do look for selling into levels and you might have a quick scalp off, say like a round number. Usually you're going to get some defense if there was a seller. Let's say, for example, selling into $6, and you're probably going to get a lot of people who are like, this is a good price to buy. So, you know, if you can get that, sometimes if you get a little pop through to the downside, you might look for a quick long scalp. But I wouldn't be, if there was a seller that I had sort of spotted in the order flow, I probably wouldn't be holding on too much longer.
Okay. Okay. Josh, I would like to ask you, moving on a little bit here, I guess, to actual improvement. Are there any steps you're taking currently, like deliberate steps, to help you improve and get better?
Yeah, I do journal every day. And like, you know, it is a bit of a bore sometimes, but to be fair, I really think it's a crucial part in getting better because you make 6, 7, 8 trades a day, for example, and then basically what you do is you sort of go to bed and you get up in the morning, you've just completely forgot about them. Like in your head, you remember the sort of the basis of the trade, but you won't remember the intricacies of it. So I think writing it down at the end of the day, you know, really sort of getting into the nitty gritty of it and, you know, writing it up in detail, I think it does help quite a fair bit. And I do notice that when I really do put in a couple of hours after the market closes in doing my journaling, I do start to improve again, and that's my goal. Well, that's not my goal, but I've sort of given myself the task this year of, you know, you're never too good to journal. Well, not in my position at the moment anyway. So I'm just making sure I do that every day, even if it takes me 2 hours after market. I think it's one of those things that I have to do.
2 hours, that seems like quite a long time, you know, 10 hours a week sort of thing. What goes into your journal? Like if we were to look at that, what would we see?
So what I do is I type in all the metrics for all the sort of the trade, like the profit, the loss, the percentage of the commissions per trade, because I'm really trying to focus on that as well. Like I want to let these, if the trades can run a little bit, you know, if I think I can squeeze a bit more out of them, like even an extra pip here and there might cover the cost of the commission. And so, you know, nutting into that percentage of the actual percentage of the commission off your profit. Sorry, I've waffled on a bit there. But, you know, so I'm looking at also like every setup I've taken, I'll annotate the chart as to where I got in, where I got out. And it does help me a little bit since I've been, you know, annotating the charts. And I don't really trade off charts, but I think it gives me, I still will have a chart. I do watch a chart when I'm trading. But I think it sort of helps me, especially taking a step back. I annotate the 5-minute chart. So I think what that does, it helps me the next day stop, getting caught up in trading the noise and also look for better entries. Because sometimes I'm just, you know, well, I, you know, 6 months ago, I'd be like, oh, momentum's here. I need to jump straight in. And then, you know, you get sort of offside a fair bit if it doesn't, you know, flush through. If you were shorting through a level, if it doesn't flush through straight away, you know, you're getting offside and you're starting to feel a little bit like, oh, I'm not that comfortable in this trade anymore. But yeah, ever since I've been doing these annotations, I've realized, you know, usually you have a bit more time and you can kind of be a bit more patient and wait for a better entry. It's just so much easier to hold a bit longer. And then obviously what I'll do as well is I'll do a write-up of the trade itself and what exactly what I did and, you know, what I could probably have done better. And if it's a really good setup, I might even, you know, playbook that setup. And that's obviously an SMB reference, but SMB capital reference. But yeah, I learn a lot from that. And that's probably why I journal so much.
Okay. So there's consistent journaling. How about actual goals? You know, it's a new year, start of 2020. Have you thought about specific goals for the upcoming 12 months?
That was, I guess, one of my goals, to really journal hard, you know, put in the hours. But another, I want to sort of keep, you know, my equity curve just keeping up in that nice, steady line. And I think what that comes down to is when you sort of, you look at your metrics of your trades, like your P&L ratio, what your sort of win-loss percentage is, things like that. So I'm trying to keep those metrics sort of stable, not too volatile, if that makes sense. Obviously, I'll take the volatility to the upside, but you don't want it to come down too much because that's when it starts getting a bit messy. So, but another thing as well, I've really given myself a goal for this year is to really focus on the market and what it actually does. You know, I was speaking to a mate today, Grant, who I, you know, sort of trade with, chat with him during the day, and we're talking about, we've never traded on the ASX. You know, he's similar age to me, maybe a bit older, but he's never traded, nor have I, in when our market is at all-time highs. So this is new for us. So it's almost like a new frontier for traders in our position. What does the market do when the index is at all-time highs? So that's another goal of mine this year, to really focus in on where the market is, what the market's doing, and how that sort of affects my setups and, yeah, the trade outcomes, things like that.
Yeah, I like that last point. That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, I think it's something, as I was kind of saying, I mentioned it a lot earlier on, but yeah, you know, the market does have all these different variables it'll morph itself into, but this is a completely new one for us where, you know, I think today, what did we finish at all-time highs? The XJO finished at 6994.8. So that's an all-time high for us. And yeah, you're kind of wondering, in my head, I'm like, is it overvalued? But the market keeps going up. So there's people that are willing to sort of, you know, keep paying or, you know, buying these stocks because there's no sort of overhang. So I guess you just have to trade what's in front of you and really listen and focus on what the market's saying, I guess, as weird as that sounds.
Moving into a new regime, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. I'd be interested to ask you this question. Obviously, if we look at how you've traded over the past, let's just say 12 months, you've been profitable. So if we look at your account balance, you know, end of December compared to January at the beginning of the year, you've made money. But would you consider yourself to be consistently profitable? Because a lot of people, that's their goal, is to be consistently profitable. But I also think a lot of people perhaps don't really think about what that might look like. So do you feel as though you've reached a point where you can comfortably say, I'm consistently profitable, you're confident in your ability to make money? How do you envision consistency to look like, and have you reached that?
Yeah, it's a good point, because if you'd asked me that 3 months ago, I would have said, yeah, I'm at that point where, you know, I'm consistently profitable now. I'm making enough money that I can live off. But then again, you know, November, December came around, there just wasn't as much opportunity for the, you know, the trades I take, and I just churned sideways for quite a while. So, you know, I think, yeah, to me, consistently profitable is just making money in, you know, having good results in all market conditions. Probably one of the things, the biggest lesson I learned out of the last 2 months where I was churning sideways was, when the opportunities aren't there, you just have to take a step back. Like, don't not trade or anything, but don't try and push it. Because every time I was trying to push it, that was when I was, you know, I'd have a good day and I'm like, all right, tomorrow, you know, just, you know, push those trades, and I'd just give everything back. And it was just, it was a cycle over 2 months. And I mean, I didn't really fall back too far on the equity curve. And it just looks like if you looked at it, it looks like a chart that's consolidating. But I wouldn't say I'm at the point where, yeah, especially after this 2 months, I've realized, yeah, I'm definitely not at the point where I can rely on just having money coming in, week out. You know, you have to sort of get to the point where, even when you have a good period, you have to sort of squirrel them away, I guess, squirrel your nuts away, so to speak. But yeah, I think consistently profitable to me, the goal is to, yeah, make money, even if it's not, you know, making the same amount of good returns week in, week out that you do when the trades are there for you, still don't lose, and just sort of keep the equity curve ticking up by not doing too much and just waiting, being patient, waiting for the conditions to return in your favor, I guess.
One last question, Josh, just to take us out here. One piece of advice which someone gave you, or if they didn't give you directly, maybe something you've heard or read somewhere, that actually made a difference.
I've been pretty lucky in the fact that there's a pretty good online community here, especially in, I mean, I'm sure it's the same all around the world, but in Australia, a lot of people who trade in the ASX, there's a lot of people out there on Twitter, there's chat rooms, things like that. And I was struggling a little bit. I had this one really bad day, and, you know, it was sort of after I'd learned, well, I'd, you know, sort of increased my skills in learning how to read order flow and things like that. But it was, I think it was Challenger Financial, and I actually got smoked in it. Like every time it tried to, you know, it gapped up, it looked like it was going to go further, and it pulled back to about the 700 level. I say it in cents, so $7 level. And I remember thinking, oh, this is a good spot to jump in. You know, I probably went too big too soon, and then it dropped through, and I thought, that's okay, I've still got plenty of bullets. And I just kept adding in, and it just wouldn't bounce. And anyway, I took my biggest loss of, you know, it was my worst trade, my biggest loss of my, you know, short trading career, but it really got me down. And anyway, I have a few people that, as I was saying, that I trade with, and, you know, sort of going through the trade with Chuck and Libby after market. And Libby said to me, she goes, why were you in that trade? And I said, well, what do you mean? Like, I was just waiting for it to bounce. She's like, yeah, every time it bounced, it couldn't even get sort of 2-3 ticks up, which was, you know, in a $7 stock, you know, it was hardly moving up whatsoever. It would just get sold into. She's like, you had a bias there, and you completely gave up your sort of, you know, your order flow reading there just because you had a bias that you thought it was going to bounce because it was an earnings season's play. And from that day onwards, it really stuck. Like, one, I was kind of embarrassed that, you know, I had been so undisciplined. And two, she told me pretty bluntly, and I really thank her for it, because from that day onwards, I was disciplined, but two, I really got a bit more of a handle on reading the order flow, because as I said, every time that stock tried to bounce, it would be sold into heavily. So it just wasn't, there was no long trade there whatsoever on the downside. Basically, she taught me a new one. but it really stuck. And from that, I think that was the lowest point of my equity curve. And ever since then, it has, lowest point in this last financial year that we've just had. So starting in July. Yeah, since that day, you know, equity curve's gone up. And I think I had about 10 or 11 winning weeks in a row, like green weeks in a row after that. So one, it sunk in, and two, because I, you know, review my trades with these guys after the market every day, I don't want to sort of be embarrassed again, if that makes sense. You have that sort of pride in yourself as well. But yeah, she gave me an earful, and I deserved it, and it stuck. It's basically, she said, forget your bias, trade what the price action is doing, trade the order flow. Yeah.
I love that example, man. Absolutely makes sense too.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing some figures around that?
Yeah, sure. So I think by the end of the trade, like I was trying to scalp my little way out of it, but then add in, I think by the end of it all up, I was about $4,500 down just on that one trade. And for me, that was a pretty big loss. That was, you know, like I'd be happy with a $4,500 week, let alone a day. So at that stage, and yeah, that was basically, really put me on a place. But since then, I think after that day, I end up within a month, I'd sort of, I had a, you know, $20,000 a month, and then followed that up with another $10,000 a month. And then, yeah, so we're kind of sitting where I'm in that sideways action at the moment. But yeah, I'll probably have Libby to thank for that, that ear bashing she gave me.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Good stuff. Josh, if someone wants to follow you on Twitter, would you mind sharing your handle?
Yeah, of course not. So if they want to follow me, my handle is at Josh J Evans 35. And there's a picture of me with a big dirty moustache on there with a sausage dog in my hand, so you won't miss me.
Okay. Very good. Well, I do want to say, Josh, I appreciate you putting your hand up to do this podcast. And I also appreciate how open you've been and sharing. I think it's going to be very relatable to a lot of people listening. You know, a lot of people who are considering going into full-time trading probably gives them a bit more of a understanding about what to expect. Yeah, thank you very much for doing this.
No, it's been a pleasure. And really happy that you've had me on here to tell my tale. And I hope it works, because it is pretty lonely out there when you first start and a bit daunting. So it can be done. And hopefully in 2 years' time, I'll come back and I'll be a successful trader.
For sure. Yeah, we'll have to lock that in. It would be great to have you back sometime.
Yeah, for sure, man. That'd be good.
All right, Josh, enjoy your evening and we'll chat soon.
Cheers, buddy.
You've reached the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but rest assured, there are more episodes loaded with real market insight and zero hype on the way soon. So to stay updated with each great new release, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review. We'll catch you next time on Chat with Traders.